more than 3.5 years ago that I was, among my many other projects, doing a poker radio show here in St. Louis called The Final Table with my friend Dennis Phillips. When we got word that two filmmakers were coming through town to do some research for a poker-related movie they were going to be making. And since Dennis was in Las Vegas, I agreed to meet with them. And we got together for two and a half hours, and they asked me all sorts of questions about playing casino poker and playing poker on the road and home games, and I told them a bunch of stories, and we parted ways, and then it was 2 years later that they finally got around to rolling film on this movie, and it's called Mississippi Grind, and it opens today here in St. Louis. It is directed by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, and they both join me now. Hi, how are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
First, I got to ask, that timeline we're talking about, you know, we met in early 2012. You filmed the thing in February of 2014, and now here we are in September of 2015. Anna, how can you be that patient by making a movie?
You have to be. I mean, it takes a long time. When we met with you, we were just starting the first stages of research. We hadn't even really put pen to paper yet. And when your filmmakers like us who write our own material, you know, we have to embrace the different kind of stages of the filmmaking process, from research, getting on the road, visiting casinos, meeting great people like you, to writing, and then to filming it, and then after that to post-production, editing, finding the music, and then finally getting it out there on the screen.
That is a long process, and you probably had started thinking about it before you even met with me because you had the idea, but did you have any experience yourself as gamblers or poker players?
No, we hadn't, actually. We'd been to casinos before. We'd spent some time in New Orleans, and we'd been through there, you know, playing the simple games like blackjack, but the poker rooms were always a mysterious place, you know, in a different part of the casino that looked like something really complicated and exciting going on over there that we never really could understand. And so that was part of the reason, the allure for us of making a movie like this, is that we could learn how to play a little bit and join those poker rooms and hear some stories and meet some characters at those tables.
It's a long way to go, Ryan, to learn how to play poker.
It's a long grind.
Yes, it is. I really should have started this off by thanking you for including me in the movie, because after talking to you in 2012 and then staying in touch with you every 6 months or so and knowing that you were writing the script and casting and getting financing and all of that, you were nice enough to invite me to come down to New Orleans to be an extra in the movie. And then you surprised me by saying I was going to be more than just an extra, but a featured extra in one of the key scenes. Are you regretting that now?
No way. It was it's still one of our favorite scenes in the movie. You do an amazing job as, quote, the professor at the table. And you know, you just were so instrumental for us in our process of learning about this world, and the stories that you told us were so useful in our journey making this movie. We felt like you needed to really be part of it.
You know, there was something traumatic for me in doing that, Ryan, and it's not that I was appearing in my first major motion picture and last, but that you made me wear a bow tie. I've never worn a tie of any kind at a poker table.
You know, I don't know why we did that to you. I'm sorry. I hope that it's not too traumatic looking at it. But, you know, the guy's written as a professor. We just wanted somebody to have a little bit of an odd flair at that kind of high-stakes riverboat casino gambling party that we had you in.
Yeah, Mississippi Grind is about two guys played by Ryan Reynolds and Ben Mendelsohn who meet at a small casino poker tournament in Iowa and then work their way down the Mississippi to St. Louis, to Memphis, Tunica, Little Rock, eventually headed for a big home game in New Orleans, and they need to get the $25,000 buy-in before they can go and play in there. I'm curious about the casting, because I know that you kind of gave Ryan Gosling his big break years ago when you made your movie Half Nelson, and I believe you were the first to cast Zach Galifianakis in a feature film a few years ago, and it's kind of a funny story. And Ryan Reynolds, of course, has been around and done lots of movies. But at the time we made this movie, I had not heard of Ben Mendelsohn at all. Since then, I've seen him in the Netflix series Bloodlines, and I know he's getting a lot of other work. How did you come across this guy?
We We did not know, we weren't that familiar with him either, to be perfectly honest with you. And he was suggested by one of our producers who had worked with him on another movie. Speaking of Ryan Gosling, he was in a movie called A Place Beyond the Pines with Ryan Gosling. He played the motorcycle mechanic in that movie who teams up to Rob Banks, Ryan Gosling's character. And we'd only seen him in that, and to be perfectly frank, we thought that he was just some local guy in upstate New York that the director of that film had cast, because we know that director, and we know he likes to cast local people and real people in real playing real parts. And we just thought that's what was happening. And it turns out he's sort of a legendary screen actor in Australia. He's been doing this for decades. He was a big star down there, and he's just sort of now... people are just now becoming aware of him in this country. But he's in a terrific movie called Animal Kingdom, where he usually plays these scary, really kind of frightening, intimidating characters. And what's fun about using him in this movie is that there's a little bit of that to him. There's an intensity there, but he also gets to smile and crack jokes. And it's a side of him that I think people who are familiar with him haven't seen before.
The irony is we cast a Canadian and Australian in this very American poker gambling road movie.
Yeah. The scene I am in is me playing a big hand against Ben in the casino. Spoiler alert, I lose the hand. I'm not the hero of the movie. But one of the things about working with Ben was that this guy has a casual intensity to him. That's the only two-word phrase, and it seems like that's an oxymoron to say that, but I found just sitting opposite him, watching him do his part of our scene, he had casual intensity. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. There's an effortlessness to what his performance. He just feels so lived in, and it feels real and authentic, but underneath, there's lurking all of this sort of pent-up anxiety, and there's a dangerous quality underneath the surface that we love about him.
And you also get kind of a different performance out of Ryan Reynolds from what most people might have seen him doing on screen before, right, Anna?
Absolutely. You know, we're used to seeing the polished movie star, and in this movie he really inhabits these poker rooms and dog tracks and off-track betting parlors, and you believe him there. You know, he doesn't feel out of place, and even though he still has that kind of magical leprechaun, Lucky Charm quality to him that you understand that Ryan Reynolds has, it also is nice to see him kind of peel back those movie star good looks and the charm and all that, and see something underneath that is really a lot more kind of vulnerable and, you know, dark and working class than I think we've seen him before.
The cast also includes Sienna Miller, who was on the set the night I was there, and very nice. Got a chance to talk to her for a few minutes. And Alfre Woodard has a small role. And Anna Lee Tipton is in this as well. When you are writing a movie, do you have to change the script as you go along after you cast these people? Did Ryan, Ben, Sienna, et cetera, being on the set make you say, oh, you know what? Here's what would be better now that we know it's him or her.
Not a lot. You know, there's not a lot of changes where we go off and we rewrite the parts on paper for specific actors. But it's more about when we get on set and we're working with those people, they just have a way of working, and they might make a little suggestion here or there, or might want to do it a different way. And that's always fine with us. And usually we'll do it both ways. We'll do what the script says. We'll try something new. But it's a little bit of experimentation, but really the script is the characters are the same, but they don't become really alive until the actors jump in there.
I'm sorry to harp on my scene, but you didn't give me much direction in my scene. You told me what I was going to do. You gave me the script pages for the scene I was going to be in, but you didn't tell me much of what I was going to do. Is that the way you worked with everybody?
I think that we cast people that know, and then we let them do what they know how to do. So what I was alluding to earlier with The Place Beyond the Pines, I thought Derek cast a local bike mechanic because he wanted a guy that knows how to do that kind of thing. So we cast you because we know you know how to sit at a table. We know you know how to bluff. We know you know how to hold your cards right. And you were able to do all that. We just put you in a situation. We said, look, here's the situation. Here are the cards that are out there. You play it. And we need something specific to happen. So I know that you probably would have played that hand a little differently if it was actually you. But you were at least able to look like you could hold your own at that table. And you certainly did. You did a fantastic job. I love that scene.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And You know, I will say that there are times when we get on set and we don't have an actor who's giving us exactly what we need for a scene, and we will give them more direction. So it's a testament to how you played it that you weren't getting a lot of feedback.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad. That makes me happy. Thank you. I'll tell you what was funny, being on the set that night, there were about 100 extras because the action's not just at our table. There are other poker tables in the room, and everybody's supposedly playing poker. But I think probably 80% of the extras who were hired had never played poker in their lives and certainly had never played casino poker. And you had a poker consultant who had to go over and kind of tell them, look, deal clockwise. You don't actually have to do you don't have to do everything because you're not going to be focused on in the scene. And then some of the people who had been randomly placed at the table with me and Ben also were obviously not poker players, but at our table, you needed people who knew what they were doing, and so they moved over some extras who happened to be local poker players from the Harrah's in New Orleans, right?
Yeah, we had always intended, you know, our poker consultant down there, he brought people who he played with at the Harrah's to be at that, you know, what we call the hero table, the table where the action is taking place. And somehow in the scuffle there, they had put the wrong people, some of the wrong people at that hero table, and we had to clear them out and bring the ones who were meant to be there in. It was important to us to have people who knew what they were doing when the camera was really looking at them.
Well, it absolutely has that authenticity, as do all the scenes you have. And it's not just a poker movie, I should point out. It's a gambling movie because they go to a dog track, they go to a horse track, they play blackjack, they play craps. And it's really the adventure following them and the people around them. And when I was mentioning the cast before, I neglected to mention a cameo by James Toback, who is a legendary director and, by the way, quite a gambler himself, who made a movie, I think, in 1974 called The Gambler, starring James Caan. Was that an inspiration to you, and is that why you have him in the movie?
Yes, absolutely. There were two sort of seminal guide post movies for us that really, like, guided us through the process. One was California Split, Robert Altman's movie with Elliot Gould and George Segal, about two guys that just gamble on everything and anything. And the other was The Gambler, which James Toback wrote, starring James Caan. And both movies came out in 1974, and we are huge fans of both those films. They're very different movies, and we kind of hope to, like, bridge them in some way. Some of the intensity of The Gambler with the carefree, freewheeling spirit of California Split.
Did it bother you that lousy Mark Wahlberg remake of The Gambler came out before your movie?
Ha ha ha. You know, we're not going to say anything bad about that, but if you ask James Toback about that, he has a heck of a lot to say about that remake. None of it's positive.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg is an English professor. Speaking of casting, there's your problem right there. So tell me about the road trip that you had to take to film this. I know most of it you did in New Orleans, and we'll get into that in just a second. But you do shoot exteriors here in St. Louis and up in Iowa and in the other places that I mentioned. And you had to take your own literal road trip to do that, right?
Yeah, we took when we first met you, we were doing our version of it. We were kind of following the road that our characters would take once we'd written the movie and visited a lot of these places on our own prior to it. And then when we were shooting the movie, we loaded a bus with maybe 20, 30 crew members and our two lead actors, Ben and Ryan, got in their Subaru hatchback that we had them driving in the movie. And we all drove from New Orleans up to St. Louis and stopping in Memphis and Tunica, Mississippi. And that was really, it was a really fun bonding experience halfway through the movie to all jump into a bus together and really build out the textures of our film, because first and foremost, this is a road movie that really travels our characters and our audience through different parts of America and the different kind of landscapes, human and physical and cultural that they go through.
Yeah, and it has a fantastic soundtrack and great scenes of each of the places that you visited. And I'm curious, when you stopped in each of these towns to shoot in or around casinos, did you gamble yourselves a little? And who among the stars of the movie did the best or lost the most?
Well, you know, I'll take the first part. I mean, we had not gambled before. Really, I just a little bit of blackjack. We were limited to that in terms of our casino table experience. But we sort of forced ourselves to take a tutorial, and then we jumped into a tournament in Tunica, Mississippi, over at the Horseshoe down there. And it was a really interesting experience. I had no clue what I was doing. I was like folding on the big blind when nobody had like raised. I was just doing everything wrong that you can do at the table. And I noticed all the eyes on me, and I was trying to play it cool. You know, like I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
And everyone was just like, okay, this guy's a fish. Let's just take his money. So I was out of that tournament pretty quickly because I had no clue. But Anna, fortunately, was able to just play very conservatively and just make minimum bets throughout, and she was able to sit at the table and listen and hear stories and hear some dialogue that we ended up working into the movie.
And did you cash?
Sorry, did I what?
Anna, did you cash in the tournament?
Oh, no. I was out in about 5 minutes.
No, but Anna.
No, no, I just slowly bled money for 4 hours. That's it. I did not do very well, but I did get to hear a lot of stories and meet a lot of interesting characters and get a little bit of a better hang of how the game is played. People are also more patient at the table with me because I was a lady, I think.
Oh, yeah.
There's a certain kind of culture around that, and people were a little more patient, kind of helping me out a bit, which I think helped me stay in there longer. But I'd say that for sure, the person who got the itch the most when we were making the film was our lead actor, Ben Mendelsohn, and we made sure that him and Ryan Reynolds had time a couple weeks before we started shooting the film to just be in those spaces. You know, our poker consultant taught them how to play poker and brought them to a bunch of games, and they just spent 2 weeks at the poker table spending their own money, spending their per diem, and Ben Mendelsohn, you know, being kind of a little bit of a method actor, got very involved in the poker playing down there, and we got a little nervous at first because he's not ultimately, even though he wins some hands in the movie, he starts off with his luck is really in the gutter. He's not doing very well. But yet Ben Mendelsohn is coming away from these tables after spending like 10 hours there one night. He's coming in the next day and he's like flashing $100 bills. He's like doing well. He's winning. And we're like, uh-oh, this isn't the experience that the actor should be having to get into the role. We got really nervous. But, you know, sure enough, a few days before we started filming, people were kind of catching on to him at the tables, and he not only lost everything he'd won, but he started owing some people.
Wow, so he's just like Jerry.
Yes, yeah. I don't know if it was intentional or what, but we were like, okay, now we're ready to start filming.
That is a guy who's really committed to the part. I play a loser, I have to lose. As I mentioned, I told you a bunch of stories when we first met, and you included a couple of them in there, one of which is among my all-time favorite poker stories. I will not spoil it here, but every St. Louis poker player knows the guy that story is about. And when they see the movie, they'll all point to the screen and say his name simultaneously, I'm sure.
But that's funny.
You also included something I told you about players who were trying to pick up on the tells of the other players at the table, and that there was a former FBI behavior expert by the name of Joe Navarro who got famous in the poker community by consulting some poker players and then eventually writing a book called 200 Poker Tells. And in the movie, Ben Mendelsohn's character, Jerry, is listening to an audiobook of that wherever he goes because he wants to learn more about what other people do at the table that might tip him off as to whether they have a strong hand or a weak hand or might be bluffing or whatever. Now, here's the thing I've got to ask you about. To my knowledge, there is no audiobook of Joe Navarro's Poker Tells book. So did you actually get Joe to do it?
That's right. So you are the one that turned us on to that. In our initial meeting with you, we were writing down our notes, and I went and bought that book online. I read it. And was fascinated that somebody sat down and wrote such specific tells. I mean, they get incredibly specific. And we thought, what a fun trait for our character to have to just drive around listening to this thing all day in his car. So, yeah, we approached Joe, and he went into the studio and read his own book. and we put it on CD, and that's what Jerry is listening to. That's Joe's voice.
And now I hope that you gave Joe the rights to sell the audio version, because I bet he can sell some after the movie comes out.
I hope so. I think that's what happened. I think that was the deal.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got the rights to his own audiobook. And we were just happy that he gave us, he licensed it to us to put in the movie.
Very, very nice. Now, you've been showing the movie recently at the Toronto Film Festival, and back in January, I guess you had your world premiere at the Sundance Festival. What's the important role of festivals for independent movie makers like you?
It's just a great launching pad for the movie. I mean, we started our career at Sundance with short films that we were making 15 years ago. And so we just have relationships with the programmers there, and they're just a great place, great film lovers at both these festivals. I mean, at most film festivals, they're called festivals because people go there to celebrate movies. And so it's just great to show the movie to a packed auditorium of enthusiastic film lovers. And there's a lot of press there. So it's a good place to have the launch of a movie.
Are you also trying to sell it, to find a distributor to give you some money?
At Sundance, yes. We went in without a distributor, and we sold it to a wonderful company called A24 Films, who've been putting out some terrific movies. They're a fairly new company, been around a few years, but they've done a terrific slate of movies, and we're happy to be a part of it.
Now, one of the parts of the financing of this movie that I'm curious about is that before the film opens today in St. Louis, it has been showing for a month or so on demand on DirecTV. And I've had some people in St. Louis who have DirecTV who ordered the movie, paid the $13, watched it, and then came up to me and said, "Did I see you in a movie?" So how does that DirecTV part of this all work into the financing equation?
You know, it's a new landscape for us. So this is our first movie that has had that kind of DirecTV, pay TV online element. And so I guess, you know, the idea is that the movie comes out, for instance, in New York City first, and then it goes to another 10 cities the following week and another 10 cities after that. But for all the rest of the people who aren't in those, you know, 20 or so cities, we want them to be able to see the movie too. And so this kind of, you know, hopefully gets the movie out to more people, people who wouldn't necessarily come to the movie theater if, you know, even if it were playing in their city. So, you know, we hope that it's not signaling the death of the cinema-going experience, because we really do appreciate that as filmgoers as well as filmmakers. But just as another, you know, layer of ways to see the film.
Is getting the money to make a movie the hardest part of making a movie?
Yeah, definitely. And it's all related to casting. Casting comes, once you cast a certain caliber of movie stars, then the money comes. Typically that works with smaller independent films.
I mentioned that you shot most of this movie in New Orleans. Why didn't you shoot some of the interiors here in St. Louis for the scenes that take place in St. Louis, like the one that I'm in, or other places? Why? What's so special about New Orleans as a filmmaking capital?
Louisiana has a really aggressive tax rebate for film productions there, so there's a production save a lot of money by shooting there. But we weren't just going to St. Louis. You know, we got, like Anna said earlier, we got out of Louisiana and we ended up in Alabama. We ended up in Memphis and Little Rock, and we started in Iowa. So we got to all these other places, but it just would have been too costly to actually make the whole trip to shoot it in order. So to be efficient and cost-effective, we had to do most of it in New Orleans. But we're really grateful that we were able to get to some of those other places as well.
All right, Anna, we've talked about the time it takes to do all of these things and the difficult parts of making a movie. You actually had a long-term project of your own lasted, I'm guessing, about 9 months. You had a baby recently, right?
Yes, I did. 6 months old now. So through the toughest part of it, but still just loving being a new mom.
Boy or girl?
Boy.
And do you get less sleep making a movie or making a baby?
Making a baby.
And what if your baby grows up and says, "Mom, I want to go play poker"?
I don't know. I guess I'd say good luck.
We have this audio.
I tell them to talk to you. That's what I do.
Okay, I
appreciate
that.
I got a guy you got to talk to.
Yeah, and we have this audio book by Joe Navarro. You might want to listen to first. Ryan, what are you doing next?
Well, the two of us are writing. We're working on a new script as we speak, and it's the early stages, so we're not quite sure where it's going to lead us, but we're just jumping into it.
By the way, congratulations also on a project you did, I think, without Anna, a 30 for 30 for ESPN on the 1989 World Series earthquake called The Day the Series Stopped. It was terrific.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Are you doing more projects like that, or are you going to try to continue to work together?
We'd love to do something like that. You know, Anna was also an executive producer on that.
Oh, okay.
She, because of her other production you just mentioned with the baby, she was less involved. But that was a fun project. I'm from the Bay Area, so that was a really important series to me as a kid growing up out there, the A's Giants World Series. And I was just happy to be a part of that and see that through.
All right, one other thing I've got to ask you about my scene. I'm sorry to keep coming back to it.
Please.
But I was not allowed to speak because I was an extra with no lines, because if I talk, you got to pay me more. And believe me, that $108 paid for the 10 hours of work. And having to file the taxes to get a $2 return from Louisiana. In the movie, at the end of the scene, somebody says, "Take it." And it wasn't me. Who is it?
It was temporarily, it was me in early cuts of the film. I think it ended up being somebody else that we brought in. There's a part of the process in post-production called loop group, where you bring in about 15 people into the studio, and they end up doing like a lot of those lines that where you're filling in somebody who might be talking off camera. You want them to say something, and they're saying something for extras on the screen. But you know, you're not an extra, and we would have been happy to bump you up, but I think it was, what was nice about that scene is the fact that neither one of you, I mean, that you're not talking, and it wasn't really a pay thing. We would have been happy to pay you more money. I feel bad about that, but it was more just like, I love that there's this silent guy who just doesn't want to give anything, just doesn't want to say a word to this guy. Ben's just trying to irk it out of you. He's trying to get something out of you to read you, and so he tells this joke, and even though you don't say anything, without giving anything away, he does end up biting his tail on you.
Yeah. Without Joe Navarro's help, by the way. What were you going to say, Anna?
I was going to say that the reason we ended up loop grouping, what's called loop grouping, but recording that extra little bit of dialogue for your character in the movie, is because when we showed it to some people who weren't familiar with the game of poker, they didn't understand who had won. So we had to do something that made it very clear that Jerry had won that hand.
I gotcha. I had a feeling that's what it was. That at some point somebody said, "What happened there?"
Right.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on the movie. I've been talking about it for only about a year and a half since coming down to New Orleans to do my little part in it. And I was excited to see it at a friend's house on DirecTV. And I'm actually going to go to a movie theater and see it, because I think that's a unique experience anytime you're actually in a theater. People have been asking me lots of questions about it, and I hope that a lot of people will go out and see it. And I hope it does very well for you, and I hope all good things for you in the future.
Thanks so much. I hope you enjoyed the movie and being part of it.
Yeah, appreciate your help, too.
Well, thank you very much. If there's anything else I can ever do for you that doesn't involve talking on camera, I'm there.
Yeah, we'll have to play around poker with you in the future.
All right, thanks. Anna Bowden and Ryan Fleck here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.